mentally disabled, the medically fragile, cost the debt.
We'll have, Madam Chair, Senator, you will have to get through that, we don't have it off the top of our head.
So this 1.04 million is for the, acute mentally disabled or mentally ill patient.
That is right.
For the mentally ill.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, that's right.
Or how many of them?
Generally, about a person will stay in one of those beds if the system has the capacity for people to move to the right level of care, somewhere between 3 and 7 days, sometimes as long as 10 days. This problem is created when people are committed to the state, they've completed their acute care, they are not well enough to simply be discharged from the hospital. They need ongoing, longer-term care, but there is no bed for them to go to. And so they wait until a bed opens in this more expensive care.
So this is to provide for acute care while they're in the hospital. They stay longer because there's no community facility for them to stay in. So why don't we have more community-based mentally ill facilities?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, through previous rebalancings this biennium and through a budget package that the 1999 legislature authorized, we've developed about 120 beds of community placement for these people, and all of those beds are full. There is relief in the caseload money in the governor's recommended budget for 0103. This is what will get us through these last weeks of this biennium until we can begin to add additional resources after the governor's budget is passed, if it is.
Representative Banks.
Madam Chair, maybe I can help. This is an area I work in every day. And basically what we have is we have community acute short-stay beds for people who primarily come into the emergency rooms. They're disoriented, they're psychotic and schizophrenic. Some of them are a danger to themselves or to others, quite often to others. The police pick them up and bring them in. They're there for multiplicity of reasons. They've stopped taking their medication, or it's a new onset of their illness, or it's something that's chronic that has reached a crisis proportion. We bring them in, and usually within 3 to 4 days, maybe 5 days, we get most of them stabilized and allow them to go back out in the community and under control again through local mental health departments. But a percentage of them are not ready to go back out, and we have not been successful in stabilizing them. They need to move on to a longer-term in-house care. And we have a shortage of those, and so those people end up staying at our acute short-term bed. A good example is at Rogue Valley Medical Center. We have an area we call 2 North, and that's our acute beds for these people. And we'll have at any time a certain number of patients there who are awaiting placement at other places in the state, up in Salem usually, for long-term care. And that's the niche they're looking at here. And that's, I believe, what you're trying to get to. And we're having more and more trouble getting that placement occurred because we're seeing an increase in people with acute mental illnesses coming into our hospitals as a result of putting more of them out in communities. That's one of the trade-offs we have made as far as policy is concerned, and how we deal with mental health, how we deal with acute mental health especially. We're not talking about people that are mildly or moderately depressed or have anxiety disorders. We're talking about people who are psychotic and who really need our help. And I think that's what you're talking about here.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, that's exactly what we're talking about.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, this is for them to stay until your new acute care, your traditional facility is ready.
Go ahead, Madeline.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee. People recover and move into the right part of the system every day. So someone may be waiting today at Salem Hospital someone will be discharged from the Oregon State Hospital to a program in Southeast Portland because someone has gotten well enough to live in their own apartment. Someone moves out of the state hospital, the person from Salem Hospital can move into the state hospital. So we're constantly managing the flow of people throughout the state to the right level of care, but we don't have enough of the right level of care for these longer term patients. So people don't necessarily have to wait until July 1 or July 15th. They may just wait until Thursday when a bed opens. But every day, yesterday, I had 8 people waiting that I was paying on average $770 per day for. Today it might be 7 or it might be 9, depending on what's happened with people in other places in the system.
Well, I just, Madam Chair, I hope that in the 0103 budget, you have proposals to set up more community-based facilities that can help to transition these youth care patients.
And Chair Sanity, the budget does include increases for those types of facilities. What Madeline just described is a system capacity issue.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough capacity for a growing number of mental health clients in the appropriate settings. And it is a day-by-day transition issue for us to deal with.
Good.
Thank you, Madeline. The next issue deals, we've talked about the eligibility issue. The third item under mental health is a mistake that we made back in November and putting the budget together as well as the rebalance in November, and this corrects that mistake. We left out funding for 20 intensive treatment service slots in terms of the budget, and this is an issue that will also be in the reshoot. The good news in terms of mental health is we have identified greater amounts of indirect revenue. This is revenue that we're able to take off from federal grants that come into the mental health division and use for issues across the division, and that indirect revenue is increasing by $1.6 million in this rebalance plan, offsetting the need for an equal amount of general fund. And finally, in terms of the overall rebalance plan, we are asking for $1.1 million of funds that you have previously unscheduled to come forward and solve issues in this rebalance plan. And this is a place that we're requesting it out of the mental health division. You have unscheduled, and these are rough numbers, roughly, or the E-Board has unscheduled roughly about $7 million throughout the biennium. And even after this rescheduling, there is still $5 million or so dollars that will be available next biennium for the 0103 budget. And I'm sure the statewide budget folks have taken that into account in their estimates. Moving on to Senior and Disabled Services Division, or SDSD, the first item there is the general caseload. As we reestimate our caseload, as we do formally every 6 months or so, we have ups and downs, and in this case, the in-home cases are down while its cost per case is up. Substitute homes, and these are the assisted living facilities, the residential care facilities, and adult foster homes, their cases are slightly down, while their cost per case is slightly up. And finally, nursing home facilities cases are down, and their cost is also down slightly. When you take all that into account, you have about $640,000 of general fund savings. Keep in mind, this is roughly a $200 million program, general fund. So we're talking about a relatively small change overall in that program. And this is the type of thing you will see on a regular basis as we go through our rebalances here and in the health plan or any other caseload-driven program. The big issues for SDSD are around the recoveries. Estates collections and other things and the SSI collections. The second item under SDSD is the long-term recoveries. For example, estates collections, they're lower than what we had originally estimated by about $2 million. And so this is a significant problem, and it will carry forward into the next biennium to a certain extent.
Question, didn't we approve additional staff for recovery?
You did, and that has been factored into this, but there are certain things happening around the margins that keep us from doing collections, and part of it relates to what what folks are doing in terms of, for lack of a better term, protecting their income and establishing trusts, and the processing for those trusts are all affect this estimate. And we've overestimated, or we underestimated, the effect that those types of things have on our estates collections and other recoveries. So it's an ongoing issue for us. The general assistance caseload is slightly up, but the big issue there are the recoveries. With the general assistance caseload, we assume that those folks are going to be eligible for the federal SSI program when they come in the door. We have to make that determination, which says that we will be reimbursed by the federal government if they become eligible. We assume that 63% of those folks, we would get that 63% of what we spent back again from the feds in reimbursement. That recovery rate has declined to 57%, which causes an issue in terms of the other funds that we're using to offset general fund in this program. So this, again, is another recovery issue. We have a set of management actions that will assist in this starting next biennium. That we'll talk to you about during work session if you have questions around them in terms of how we deal with this in the 2001-03 biennium. Because like the estates or long-term care recoveries, this is an ongoing issue.
Thank you.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The SSI recoveries are down. I understood that was a pretty straightforward program. You knew what you'd paid out. Once they got the SSI, they got the money back. Is that the program we're talking about?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, it might be. What happens is folks walk in to the door and apply for general assistance. On the spot, this is sort of simplistic, but we make a judgment. Do we think they're eligible for the federal SSI program or not? If we think they're not, and we've done everything we can to do that, they aren't eligible for the program. But then they go forward, and if they're eligible or we think they're eligible, we give them the general assistance benefit. And then they start the long process of getting eligible for SSI. Not everyone makes it through that. We aren't perfect in terms of making that initial judgment on eligibility. And that's what's happening here. What we will do in terms of management action starting real soon around this, and we've already in many cases, are some increased training on staff on how to deal with that, trying to speed up the recovery system. But it is a system that is federally controlled. Our department also does that in the Volk Rehab Division, the DDS system. But the appeals process is long, and they can appeal a number of times through the Social Security Administration. So we have to factor that all in the outcomes of those systems in making that estimate, and we're not always right in doing that.
Doug, what has been the historical average?
Madam Chair, I believe it's probably around 60%. I would have to get you the historical average on that, and I can get that. I don't know it off.
Because then the question becomes, what has happened?
Madam Chair, and I'm going to ask Mr. Britton to help me if I'm not correct on this, but I think we have two types of eligibility, SSI and SSDI.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I believe on the SSDI side, historically, we were able to collect that money retroactively, and I think, was there a law change? I believe there was some sort of change that now we can no longer make that collection, and that's one of the reasons that these resources are down.
Madam Chair and members, I'm not aware that we were able to collect SSDI recoveries,
but
we are on SSI. Another factor that's going on here, according to SDSD, is that the processing time to get people through the SSI application process has also lengthened. And in our discussions with the Vocational Rehabilitation Division, that was something that they indicated as well, that the processing time, it's just simply taking longer to qualify people for SSI. So there's a lag time here as well.
So you have lag time and ability. Have you had a staffing change in the agency, those that are doing eligibility determination?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of. I'm sure we've had staff turnover in this area. I'm not sure if it's any increase. Our management efforts, some of it does involve further training and quality assurance methods in this area to make sure that we're doing as good a job as we can. The next issue is a $1.4 million general fund issue. We're requiring the AAAs to pay back some money that had been forwarded to them a few years ago that had not been paid back, and this represents $1.4 million in this biennium. It is, there is about $300,000 in the reshoot around this same issue. These are funds that we had advanced to them before the Older Americans Act federal funds were available to them, and those had never been paid back. And the AAAs know this, and they are coming forward with those payments back. As you know, SDSD in
how long ago was that?
What? 1996. I'd have to check the exact date on it. I may have that right here. Can John help me if you can remember the date? The next item, there are always vacancy savings as we try to, that positions are not filled as fast as we'd like to. But in addition to that, SDSD has already implemented a hiring freeze because their budget next biennium cuts $5 million out in areas of staff and other administrative costs, and they've anticipating that reduction have already implemented a hiring freeze among much of their staff, and we have savings this biennium as a result of that, as well as the usual vacancy savings. The total of that is about $850,000, thank you. And finally, just like we talked about in SCF with the random moment survey discussion, there is the same type of sort of roughly the same type of relationship where we have to come back and take a look at what staff is spending time on what type of clients, and we've gotten further information for our AAA transfers that show that they're spending more staff time on clients that are eligible for funding sources such as Medicaid, so we have more Medicaid revenue coming in than we anticipated, and that's offsetting the need for general fund. Again, it's the distribution of staff time among various clients, and those various clients are eligible for various funding sources. Volk Rehab Division, really the only issue here is the limitation reduction. We are getting less funds, and most of this is in the DDS area, than we anticipated, and we're removing that limitation. It doesn't necessarily mean any cut in services. For example, we anticipated, we thought about moving the DDS section out of the building, and we had put money away for that move, and we aren't doing that this biennium. And so, for example, we do not need that limitation. These are all federal funds we get when we spend the money. For the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs, there are no major issues here. Just like the Health Division, there it was a matter of the Young case again in the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs. Office of Medical Assistance Program, again, this is where the Oregon Health Plan is, and just as is the case for any rebalance, we have ups and downs in our caseloads, and in this case, they're tracking upward, we're estimating, for the remainder of the biennium. The caseloads that are increasing are listed there, the general assistance caseload, the poverty level medical, or the PLM, or PLUM, children, the adults and couples, that is one of what we refer to as the new eligibles under the health plan. Those caseloads are going up. Those increases are offset by a decrease in the TANF, grouping of clients eligible for the health plan, the PLM adults, the families group, foster care, and the senior and persons with disabilities group. So the net effect of that is an increase of 860 cases on the average monthly caseload for a cost of about $1.3 million general fund. And that is an issue that we will need to deal with in the reshoot as you put together the 0103 budget. That increase carries through to next biennium also. The net impact of the next item deals with various costs. We have less people in managed care. That increases costs per case slightly. We have adjustments in hospital settlements and in increases in CDRC. This is the Child Development and Resource Center at OHSU, and the net effect of all those is an increase of cost of about $440,000. The CHIP program, the caseload there is up by about 200 cases on an average monthly basis, there is a small cost in per case increase, so that is an increase in what we need, and we have an offset in tobacco revenue because we try to fund the CHIP program, the tobacco revenue, and move monies around between the health plan and the CHIP program to keep that balance there. There are reductions both in revenue and costs. You take a look at the non-health plan side of OMAP, and these are folks that are in the Medicare Biomedical program and some of the qualified medical beneficiary programs. We call them the non-health plan clients. There are savings there in terms of caseloads and cost per case for savings of just under $1 million, $920,000. And we also are seeing net increases in revenues. Keep in mind this is a $2 billion program and we're seeing a revenue shift here of about $2 million. We're estimating those come from increased drug rebates, and that often happens when you have an increase in fee-for-service costs. You also see an increase in drug rebates because drug costs make up a large share of that fee-for-service amount. We have some premium. Our estimation on premiums are up a bit. There's a loss in motor vehicle accident funds, and I warn you that is a big issue that you'll have to deal with in the 0103 budget because of an attorney general opinion on the use of the motor vehicle accident fund and how it applies to our department, and there's an increase in Department of Education funds. All those, the net of that means there's a little over $2 million of other fund resources we're estimating that are increasing, and that offsets the need for general fund. So overall, there's actually a savings in OMAP in this rebalance plan. And finally, department-wide
support.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In looking at the OMAP program, I wonder if there's another dynamic here that as we saw in an earlier budget, as people, in my practice, I see people going off TANF and going into the workforce, and one of the reasons they stay in the workforce is they now continue to have medical benefits, whereas under the old plan before OHP, they didn't. And many of them would not go to work or would quit their job when they needed health insurance and drop back into TANF to get medical care. So I wonder if there isn't a dynamic going on here, if you're aware of it, that people are dropping the TANF and general caseloads because more people are working because Oregon Health Plan allows them to work and keep their medical benefits. The overall net result being a positive. Is that a supposition that can be made, or is it too little data to make that decision on?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, given that the TANF program is down and the families program is also down, I'm not sure if that relationship occurs. And in fact, under our new forecasting mechanisms we've implemented in the past year, we actually track the transfers between these categories of clients, and we can give you more information. I have staff that is just waiting to show folks this information. And then that actually is part of the forecasting we do now for the health plan. We measure folks that leave the health plan, that move from one group to another, like your relationship, or that come on to the health plan. And that's actually how we forecast the health plan now.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And finally, there are no major issues in the department-wide support services, and really I think the only issue here was the Young case and for these employees, and also one other small issue. So that completes my presentation of the rebalance, Madam Chair, and we'll stand for any further questions that the committee might have.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5046 and open the work session on House Bill 5046. Ms. Baker. Oh, Doss first. Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My comments are going to be really minimal. As Doug pointed out, this is the fourth rebalance plan that you've had. This is, I would consider, when you look at all of them, fairly benign as far as the number of changes. As you will see next biennium, as part of the emergency board process, there are always a number of caseload and cost changes in this organization, especially related to federal changes that we have and will continue to be fairly revenue aggressive as far as trying to get the maximum amount of federal funds to fully finance this program. And so you see these changes that have taken place in this plan, and we'll see more of those next biennium. As far as our recommendation, we are recommending approval of the plan as presented by Doug. We do have two minor modifications that Doug pointed out. It's in the Adult and Family Services program. After they put their plan together, there are more child support payments, and as a result, the other fund expenditure limitation increase is, as we're recommending it, is $18,687,284, and that's consistent, I believe, with your staff's recommendation. And we're also suggesting to reschedule $1,149,665 general fund, again related to this issue. But with that, Madam Chair, we do recommend approval of this plan.
Ms. Baker. Thank you. Perhaps we'll start by making sure that everybody has a copy of the handouts that were delivered to your offices yesterday. The packet included both the agency's initial request letter, the JOS recommendation, the legislative fiscal office analysis, and proposed amendments to House Bill 5046. And since we'll use those to go through the work session. Just want to make sure everyone has that. If you go to our write-up, it looks like an emergency board analysis format. It says House Bill 5046, Department of Human Services 9901, budget rebalance. We have a summary of the legislative fiscal office recommendation there. And in the interest of time, the way I'll approach this is to say basically what Legislative Fiscal Office is recommending is approval of the plan with adjustments in Adult and Family Services Division, Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division, and Senior and Disabled Services Division. And we will go through those individual adjustments and talk about those with you. As I indicated earlier, at the point that the subcommittee takes action, there are amendments to Bill 5046 that will be prepared for the full committee. The proposed amendments in the packet are a summary of what the amendments would be if you accept the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation on this rebalance. So you can see the net impact on each of the appropriation lines of the rebalance. So this is how their 9901 legislatively approved budget would change if you accept the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendations. So what I'd like to do at this point is have John Britton discuss his revised adjustments to the Adult and Family Services Division budget. Then I'll talk about the recommendations I have for Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. And then John can talk again about the Senior and Disabled Services Division adjustment.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Sheila. Members, I have three recommendations with respect to the Adult and Family Services Division. The first is to reduce the proposed federal funds expenditure limitation by $15.2 million. This $15.2 is non-limited federal funds, and typically we don't change those throughout the biennium, and we are proposing that they remain the same prior to the rebalance adjustments. Now, what that increase in non-limited federal funds does show, though, is the increase in food stamp caseload and benefits, federal benefits that are paid. The second recommendation with respect to the Adult and Family Services Division is to increase the other funds expenditure limitation for AFS by $550,110, and request the Department of Administrative Services to reschedule $21,944 general fund in AFS instead of what was requested, which was $389,748. And I note here that earlier in the biennium, AFS expected that child support collection revenues would be lower than budgeted because of a federal law change. And in April 2000, at the rebalance request of the emergency board, DAS unscheduled $572,054 of general fund in case the loss of revenue needed to be offset with that general fund. Collections are higher than anticipated in April of 2000, so only $21,944 is needed. The third recommendation is the most substantive of these three, and that is to request that the Department of Administrative Services unschedule an additional $1.7 million of general fund in the Adult and Family Services Division. The division believes that its federal TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families funds carryover, will be about $1.7 million higher than anticipated in the governor's revised budget. That has, since the time of this writing, been changed. We now believe we're going to have about $13.2 million of TANF carryover. This would use 1.7 of it to backfill general fund above the maintenance of effort level. Now, this would still leave about $200,000 to $300,000 above the maintenance of effort level in the 1999-01 budget. The other thing you need to know is that this $1.7 million would otherwise be available to carry over to the 2001-03 for use in someone's budget during the next biennium. If we use it here to backfill general fund, obviously it will not be available next time. So those are my three recommendations for AFS.
Restate your $1.7 million request recommendation.
Sure. We have now, it appears, about $13.2 million of TANF savings that we've identified both in the 1999-01 budget as well as in the 2001-03 budget. So what we're proposing here is to use a portion of that, $1.7 million, to backfill general fund in the current biennium's budget, but that would mean that we'd have 1.7 less to carry over to the 2001-03 budget in terms of TANF federal dollars.
Any other alternatives besides that? In terms of funding sources, movement within, without reductions in service, or
within, I don't believe so, Representative Schrader.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up.
It seems like a lot of money to appear at this point in time. I'm just curious, how come we have this carryover at this point in time?
Madam Chair and Representative Schrader, we ask the division to look again at their potential TANF carryover as part of the analytical process on this rebalance. One of the main causes that is generating additional TANF savings, it appears, is again this shift. Well, actually, it's a shift in time, staff time, that more staff time is being devoted to food stamp caseload and daycare caseload, actually, over the course of the 99-01 biennium, less time to TANF. So this directly relates to how staff is using its time out in the field.
Madam Chair?
Representative Carlson?
This doesn't necessarily mean there's a reduction in service, does it? I mean, isn't this just a monetary shift?
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, this is a fund swap.
Right. That's
in other words, we're saving general fund and using federal funds.
Any additional questions?
There is the next bullet is a recommendation on the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division budget. Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of the rebalance plan, but with some direction to the agency. A little bit of background here. In its budget this time, the division had two sort of startup programs. One was a pilot program for atypical antipsychotic medications. $1.9 million was appropriated for that. Not all of that money will be spent this biennium. About $1.6 million is expected to be spent. Without some affirmative action, that money would stay in the budget and revert at the end of the biennium. The other piece that I wanted to mention, although I don't directly address it in this recommendation, is that the startup costs for the Staley versus Carver settlement agreement that were approved in the interim are not also not expected all to be spent this biennium. There will be some impact on 0103 for that, but the combination of those two factors led to this recommendation, which is to use some of the savings from the atypical antipsychotic medication pilot program, up to $250,000 general fund, to have the division pay some startup costs for getting one of their new state hospital wards ready so that as early as in the biennium as possible, that ward can be ready. I did refer to a ward for civilly committed persons. It may be when all is said and done that's a ward for criminal commitments, but the idea is to get the ward up and running as quickly as possible. There is money in the agency's 0103 budget for those startup costs. So by paying some of those startup costs now from money in 9901 savings, that amount of money would be freed up in 0103 and could conceivably be redirected then to help cover some of the Staley versus Kitzhaber settlement startup costs that aren't being incurred this biennium. So it's a timing and cash flow issue to use the money that they have available now to address a need that they have and free up money in 0103 to address some of the problems that we see there. And this would not be an adjustment in terms of dollar amount in their budget. We would just, in the budget report, if the subcommittee approves this, indicate that that was the subcommittee's direction to the agency.
Is there someone here from the agency to ask, when will the evaluation be completed on the atypical antipsychotic medication study?
For the record, Madeline Olson, Assistant Administrator for Mental Health Services with the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. The actual final report on the evaluation of the atypical antipsychotic will be available to the state in July after the final service data through June 30th is available on the clients that are getting medications now. You had a copy of the preliminary evaluation, but the cost effectiveness and some of that stuff can't be determined until all of the service data is in.
And if the cost effectiveness study determines that it's worthwhile for us to continue what we started with the pilot, what are the plans within the agency?
Madam Chair, one of the things we're asking the two programs to do at the moment is to get us data about the people that will be remaining without any other source of coverage for their medications at the point that pilot ends, and then we'll be able to price what that would be in the new biennium, and we should have that by work session.
And a question, is it the plan on the for the civilly committed to also shift the youth population? Is that this 250,000 that we make beds for the civil commitments? I know that there's some discussion about with Jasper Mountain and others to deal with this. Is that a part of this balance?
Madam Chair, the issue around the youth population in those high-end services is the subject of that budget package 220.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
I have a question for Sheila. When you say that freeing up funds in 01, 03 for other users, what is the amount we are looking at?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, if the agency spends $250,000 general fund in 9901, mm-hmm. that they would have otherwise spent in 0103, then mm-hmm. that frees up the $250,000. Mm-hmm. So it would be dependent on how much they can spend through the end of the biennium that they would otherwise have spent in 0103.
Oh, so that's the amount for me to free up. Mm-hmm. And they can start earlier. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to look out for all the savings we can find. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'll continue. There are two recommendations of a technical nature with respect to SDSD. The first also involves the mental health division. We are proposing that the rebalance plan be adjusted for SDSD and the Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Services Division to reflect shifts in general fund, other funds, and federal funds among budget clusters that took place prior to the submission of the department's rebalance plan. And these adjustments were done to facilitate the Medicaid upper payment limit mechanism. We're proposing here that SDSC's general fund appropriation should be increased by $7.2 million. Mental Health Division's general fund appropriation should be decreased by a like amount. SDSC's federal funds limitation increased by 4.3, and the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division decreased by a like amount. Again, this was a funding switch that is allowed under the law between these two divisions, and it was done to facilitate the Medicaid upper payment limit mechanism, but it was not included in the rebalance plan. So this is something that needs to be done to true up the ending limitation amounts with reality, I suppose you'd say. And the final recommendation is to reduce SDSD's other funds expenditure limitation by $180 to correct an inadvertent error.
If all errors were that minute.
Madam Chair, Ms. Archer has asked me to bring up a topic that will probably make all of our lives more complicated, but I do want to put it on the record for your consideration. What we're doing here as far as requesting the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule general funds is not the same as disappropriating general fund. And that's a distinction that is important. First of all, I think Mr. Wilson mentioned that if you were to accept their proposal to reschedule, I think about $1.1 million, is that about right?
Yeah.
That there would still be about $5 million of general fund that has been unscheduled by the Department of Administrative Services. If we add another 1.7, as we are recommending with respect to AFS, that brings the total up to about 6-7, thereabouts. However, that money is not available to be used for the next biennium, at least directly. If we disappropriated that money, it could be used in the budget planning process for 2001-03. As it is, if it remains unscheduled,